Yes, good afternoon. Welcome.
We will begin with some meditation before we begin our talk. I allow the body and the mind to settle down. Letting go of any tension from the muscles of the body. Letting go of any tension from the mind. Letting go of all thoughts of the past and the future. Withdrawing myself from this external world of activities, responsibilities, relationships. I turn my attention to the world within. Beginning my inner journey. I go deeper and deeper within. To the center of my being, to the center of my existence. I experience my entire existence concentrating, merging into a point. A sparkling star. That energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. My original and eternal existence of light. Eternal energy, the soul, the spirit. Shining like a star in the center of the brain. This body, my costume. Silent and peaceful. stabilized in this inner silence. Stabilized in my eternal form of the spirit, I take my consciousness beyond this world of matter. Beyond this earth, beyond the moon, beyond the sun, beyond the stars, beyond space and time, until I see myself in a world of light. And I see myself in the presence of God, the light of all lights. A sparkling star of conscient energy. The ocean of bliss. I rest in his light. I rest. In the embrace of his light. Healing. Healing. Holding on to the light of God. I allow myself to return back to this world of matter, back to this body, this costume of mine. Once again, I take my place in the center of the brain, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the eternal spirit, a being of light, a being of peace. Yes, good afternoon. Welcome again. So the last time we met, it was all dark and grey, and it was raining and cloudy, and we spoke about guilt and shame. Heavy stuff. Guilt and shame. Today we shall speak about anger. That's even better, right? Guilt and shame. People say, oh, we don't feel any guilt. Anger we feel, right? We all feel, right? Anyone says, we don't feel any anger at all? No. Anyone says, well, I don't really feel any guilt and shame. Some? Really? No, that can't be. Someone has to raise their hands. No? Okay. So today we shall speak about anger, dealing with anger. What is behind anger? There is anger, it's talked about so much, right? Anger management. People who have difficulty dealing with their anger are sent to do some courses on managing their anger. I have an uncle in the United States who's been to anger management. He was sent there. And he said it didn't really help him. And he said the psychiatrist who conducted the course was himself quite messed up. So he said, when I went in and I saw him, I said, now this guy's going to help me? No way. But anyway, maybe his attitude was responsible for him not being helped by that. Anyway, so we shall speak a little bit about anger today. So what is anger really? What is anger? Is there another marker in the back? Because this, I think, is running out of ink. Yeah. So what is anger really? What's the experience of anger? Since we all experience it in some form. What is our experience of anger? Thank you. This is not a board marker, is it? It's a paper. Anyway, sorry. Thanks. Yes?
Insecurity.
What is the experience of anger?
Oh, I thought you meant where anger came from.
Okay, anger came from insecurity.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
Yeah, of course, insecurity. But the experience of anger itself, what is it?
It's very powerful.
That for sure it is. It is very powerful. So what is the experience of anger, yes?
Frustration.
There is an experience of frustration. And where does this frustration come from? There is an old hypothesis in psychology when they speak about anger. They speak about this frustration-aggression hypothesis. Frustration leads to aggression. So aggression comes from frustration. So there is this element of frustration.
Helplessness
as well. There is the experience of helplessness. There is this experience of frustration. Yes?
And maybe fear.
And perhaps there is also the experience of fear. Interesting. So there is, for example, certainly the experience of... Oops, I'm so sorry, I need to... It's too late now. This was not the... I'll manage. So, helplessness. Then we speak about the experience of frustration, certainly. Yeah, somebody else, you were saying, yes? Yeah, it creates, but what the experience itself, of course, it creates a lot of stress. The experience itself, someone will say something about fear, someone said something about fear, right? You said fear.
Yeah.
What kind of fear are we speaking about?
Maybe fear of being left or being outside of group or...
Some fear of loss.
Yeah.
Left behind, some fear of loss. Okay, so there is some element of some fear connected to the experience of loss, for example. It could be, of course, many other things. But, what else?
It's reaction to insecurity.
Some element of insecurity. So the fear, insecurity, we have this experience of fear, some experience of insecurity. Connected to the possibility of some sort of loss. Yes?
For me, it is difficult to evaluate be in my own body.
To be your own?
To be in my body. It's very difficult when I'm mad.
Okay, but we sort of lose control. That's what you're speaking about.
No, it's like angst and fear, and I feel like in a bubble, glass bubble.
So there is fear, and there is also this experience of angst.
Yes.
We will come back to that. This angst. Actually, in German, angst means fear. Right?
Also in Danish.
But it's also anxiety, right? It's also anxiety. But it also has the connotation of fear. So fear and anxiety, we use this word angst. Yes, what else? Anything else? So one is, yes?
Helplessness.
Ah, there is the experience of helplessness. I'm sorry, why? You know, we have to manage with this pen. Yes, and oh, there is another board marker. Yes, what else? Anything else? What else? Yeah?
Agitation.
There is an experience of irritation. Very often, anger is spoken about as a continuum that stretches from the experience of what we speak about as irritation to the more extreme experience of what we call rage or fury, right? The extreme. Rage and fury. And on the other hand, you have irritation and annoyance, a milder experience of anger. So we have this continuum of anger. And then, of course, we speak about this... I'm so sorry. What do I do with this? I have absolutely... So now I should get angry? Frustration. The frustration. So let's see how well we manage with my frustration today. So, of course, we speak about this experience of aggression. We have spoken about that. The aggression can take many forms. So, when we have this fear and insecurity, what do we try to do? Some of the things that we try to do, fear and insecurity. You're afraid, yeah?
Try to get power.
Try to get power. Yeah. Try to get control, right? We try to get some sort of control, some sort of element of power, and we believe, perhaps, and of course, if we are unable to control, then we have this experience of helplessness. Anything else that we can speak about when it comes to the experience of anger? You know where this word anger comes from? It comes from an Old Norse word. Yeah? Comes from Old Norse. And there is a specific word in Old Norse from where anger takes its roots.
Is it anger?
It is anger. And what does it mean?
Remorse.
Oh no, that's the present. In present Danish, you speak about anger as remorse. But in Old Norse, anger had another meaning. Anyone is aware of that? It means sorrow. Anger was sorrow. It comes from that word. It is A-N-G-R. That's how it's written. And this basically means the experience of sorrow. Anger is seen as an experience of sorrow. The experience of sorrow that emerges, say, from some experiences. So we have, one is we have spoken about loss. So it has the connotation of sorrow. It has the connotation of grief. It has the connotation of pain. So there is grief and there is pain leading to the experience of sorrow. And we know loss creates the experience of grief. Trauma creates the experience of pain. And of course, these all go very closely together. And here we have our roots of anger. Coming from grief and pain, coming from loss and trauma, either actual loss and trauma or the fear of some loss and trauma. So the actual loss and trauma, when we have experienced an actual loss, say for example, close relationships, when we've experienced an actual loss, either due to say death, or whatever, separation, whatever it is, a close relationship. How do we feel?
Sad.
sad, but that sadness comes from where? Someone very close, yes?
Detachment,
maybe. Sort of, you feel detached, you feel alone, you feel isolated, especially when it comes to close relationships. Very often the relationship becomes an extension of the self, and when that relationship is cut off, it's like a part of the self is lost. And there is the experience of incompleteness, there is the experience of emptiness, there is the experience of loneliness. And so we have this experience also of what we can speak about as emptiness or some sort of incompleteness because of that loss. And then we say, when we feel incomplete, what do we want to do? We feel incomplete, what do we want to do? Make ourselves complete. We speak about the beginning of desire. We speak about the beginning of desire. Egocentric desire, there can be different forms of desire. In spirituality, at least in the philosophy of Raja Yoga, which we practice, we speak about egocentric desire, impure desire and pure desire. We speak about desire in two forms, impure desire and pure desire. Egocentric desire is selfish desire. I want to fill myself up. So we have this kind of a desire emerging. And when the desire is fulfilled, it's okay. We get some temporary relief. The desire is not fulfilled, we feel frustration. This frustration gives us sorrow. That leads to anger. So we have the root of anger coming from the experience of fear. We have the root of anger coming from emptiness and incompleteness that creates desire, that creates frustration, that creates sorrow. And we can find this, it is a very common experience. We find this in all animal species, you can see that. Right? You see that. You see animals, for example, if the child of the mammal is being harmed or in the threat of being harmed, that animal will fight, will go into rage, fury to protect that child. Right? Rationality goes away. You'll even take on an enemy that is many times bigger than you. It gives you courage also in some ways, right? So, people use this technique, at least they have used it for many, many years in battles. You have something called battle frenzy, battle rage. And there are techniques that people use to create this kind of battle rage in people. They go beyond thinking about the self, and then they don't care about how big or powerful the enemy is. You go and fight. You give up. So this kind of an experience that comes from rage, that is one experience we see very, very clearly coming from fear. One is the fear of harm. So my child is an extension of me, and the loss of my child is just too painful. Any threat to that, I will react. And sometimes we also see in animals, the child is already dead, the child has been killed. So rationally, there is no point, there is no reason behind the animal to go and risk its life and fight. And yet the animal does that. Yet the animal does that. The child is dead. The child cannot be, there's no way the child will come back. But the animal will go into frenzy, rage. The pain is so deep of the loss. That pain of incompleteness, that loss is so deep. I react with that rage and that anger. So we have this experience of anger coming from the experience of sorrow. And so when we look at our own anger, when we look at others' anger, it's a useful rule of thumb to understand that this is coming from some deep pain. The moment I look at that, I become silent. It's a simple way of conquering anger. There are many ways of managing anger, right? Count 1 to 10. Take a deep breath. Okay? That was a very nice technique that I learned and I also taught. No, by the way, I didn't go over any anger management, if you're wondering. Not yet, anyway. Maybe after the session with the pen not working, I might need it. But there's this technique, right? So you're feeling very angry. What do? Walk slowly toward the refrigerator. Open the door of the refrigerator. Take out a bottle of cold water. If there is no cold water, open the freezer, take out the ice cubes.
Then go toward the table, take a glass of water, put the ice cubes in the glass, put some water on that, then sit down, then count to 10. And that's painful. Drink the water, count to 10. And then sip the water, slowly. You must not drink the water, the glass of water, in anything less than 20 sips. So you should have 20 sips. And between each sip, or between two sips, there have to be 10 seconds. Nice? You conquer anger, don't you? you calm down. So that's one of the short-term way of looking at it. That's good. We should use that. Why not? It's good. It helps us in the short term, right? But then we keep facing these situations. How often do we do that? It's really tough. I start getting angry because this thing is not working, you see. My desire is being frustrated. My desire to explain all these things to you is being frustrated. So now what do I do now? Go to the refrigerator. No, it just won't work. It just won't work. I need to find some other way of dealing with it. Short-term strategies are good, but how do we deal with anger in the long term? What do we need to pay attention to? And first of all, do we even recognize when we are angry? Do we always recognize when we are angry? Because when we speak about anger, we speak, of course, of this experience of aggression. There is the sense of, many times in anger, there is a sense of wrong. Something wrong has been done unto you. Unfair. It's wrong. The way the person spoke to me is just wrong. Right? It's wrong, and that's right. And then I have this desire to give it back. Cause some form of harm to the other. This experience of wrong. This aggression we speak about can, of course, take various forms. One is we speak about active aggression, but it can also take a passive form. And this may not always be very clearly observable. We may not even realize that we are actually being angry because it is a passive expression of anger. And when we speak about this, of course, we can also have anger that is directed towards the self and anger that is directed towards others. The passive forms can also take these two forms, where I have the expression of anger towards the self and towards others. Can we think of some examples of these? Let's take the easy one first, active aggression. Active forms of, do we need examples? That's clear, right? That's evident, right? Active forms of anger towards others. Most extreme, kill someone, period, right? Kill someone out of rage, blind rage. Some form of violence, mutilation. Okay, that's the extreme form. What would be other forms of this active aggression that we speak about? Slightly, subtly, yes?
Verbal abuse,
verbal aggression. What else?
Shouting.
Yeah, okay. That's obvious, yes?
Kick something.
Kick or punch or some form of physical violence. Could there be other forms which are a little more subtle?
Writing everything down.
Writing a nasty email.
No, one is angry about something, it might...
Okay, writing it down to sort of vent the anger.
Writing it down and give it back.
Give it back. Yeah, that's a nice way. What else?
Purposely hurt someone's feelings.
These are quite active expressions. Active expressions could be even slightly more subtle. For example, bitter remarks. Perhaps even more subtle, criticality. Criticism. It could be even more subtle, sarcasm. So we often don't see these as angry things. We're just having fun. We're making fun of others. Where is this making fun of others coming from? Why do we get pleasure in making fun of others? Making fun of other people, other races, other religions, other communities. Yes.
Insecurity.
Yeah. This is also an expression of anger that we speak about. Putting others down. So, are we aware of what we are doing? And are we aware of where it is coming from?
Am I aware of the insecurity and the fear inside me and the pain inside me that is making me engage in such behaviors? So we have a lot of stand-up comics, right? Making fun of each other. Of course, it could also be very humorous and we can all laugh about it. That's a different story. But still, behind many of these people, you could see there is this element of pain and trauma, of having been discriminated. They turn it around. It's not as bad as going and killing someone, of course, right? But still, am I aware of where it is coming from? And then, of course, I can work on it. Otherwise, you know, it sort of stays there. So we have some expressions like that. Towards the self, extreme, suicide, self-mutilation, we know that. Many people, I used to have a client, he used to keep pinching himself. Sometimes it would bleed. And he would pinch himself. Sometimes he would use his nails and pinch himself. And he would bleed and he would, there's no way, I can't overcome that. And I asked him, so what are those moments in which you start doing that? Pinching and mutilating yourself. What are those moments? Can you identify those moments? And usually for him, it used to happen when he was sort of, he wanted to study. He wanted to get good grades and all that stuff. And he wanted to study. And whenever he found his attention diverting, he would pinch himself. It was like compulsive. He would pinch and he would bleed and he showed me his arm. It was like, you know, full of marks. Very, very, very bad. And he just couldn't stop himself from doing that. Where is this coming from? Where is this coming from?
Pain.
Pain. What is that pain and what is it creating? This is what we need to understand. What is that pain and what is it creating? Where is that pain coming from? One is, of course, we speak about this loss and trauma that we experience from our outer world. And this is the world of the ego. That part of our identity, personality that develops in interaction with the world, right? So there could be some experiences from childhood, there could be some experiences in relationships, there could be some experiences. We all have our own histories. So we have various experiences that create the sense of loss and trauma. And we can, of course, relate it to that. So many people say, oh, childhood experiences, his relationship with his mother, his relationship with his father, and all that may be true. But why is it that these same experiences have such a deep impact on some people and don't seem to have any impact on other people? There's a lot of research in psychology that shows that not everyone reacts to, say, childhood abuse, violence in the same way. In fact, there is a lot of research that shows the percentage of people who react very negatively is actually in the minority, not the majority. It's the minority that collapses. It's not the majority. The majority is able to recover by itself. And yet the kind of data that we have, we speak a lot about this minority, whatever, 20, 30, 40%, whatever it may be, in different problems that we experience. And we speak about them all the time. But there is a significant number of people who seem to recover quite well on their own. So why is it? So if it was the experience of abuse in itself, it should have affected everyone. So then we say, okay, we may have different personality traits, and some personality traits may help people deal with such experiences in a better way, perhaps. We can speak about that as well. But from a spiritual perspective, where do these personality traits come? How is it working? From a spiritual perspective, we have... Yes, you were saying something?
Yeah, I beg to differ because maybe you've experienced it and maybe you're saying there's no associate out, but...
No associate
out, that's what you're saying.
You can't translate that term.
But if it's the minority that collapses, like 100% is affected...
Mm.
But you can, maybe they have a job and doing well, but they're still affected.
Yeah, I agree with you. So the question is, what differentiates? What are some of them? We know a lot about psychology, right? We can speak about personality. And they may be affected, but they seem to somehow recover. They seem to somehow manage. But by the way, when you're saying they're affected, actually a lot of research shows that many of them are not even affected after some time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work on that nowadays coming up. Many of them not even affected. They seem to have recovered quite well.
Yeah.
And yet there are many, of course, who are very deeply affected. So what discriminates? We can speak about genes, we can speak about personality, we can speak about many of those things. No, I'm not rejecting social au, or social au, whatever you call it. I'm not rejecting anything. We're trying to look at it spiritually. We're trying to look at what could be some spiritual explanations behind this kind of behavior and these kind of differences. That's all. Yes?
I speak from experience.
Yes?
I would say it must be something with letting go and to forgive.
Yeah. We will speak about these things, of course. But we also, in the spiritual philosophies, we of course speak about the inner world. We have spoken about it many times, the inner world of the soul. And the understanding, one way of looking at it is that the experiences that happen in the world outside to me remind me of something more deep. Where we speak about, this is connected to what we spoke about in the previous session, our deep experience of guilt and shame. Our deep experiences of having gone against the values of the soul. Our deep experiences of having committed violence towards the self, which is also traumatic and painful for the soul. And when I have created that trauma to myself, we spoke about it in the previous session. When I've created that trauma to myself, I want some compensation for that. And I don't know how to compensate deep inside. So I try to find compensation in the world outside. So the emptiness I have created for myself through going against my own inner values, I try and fill it up, for example, through relationships. I try and fill it up, for example, through a job. I try and fill it up in many ways. Food. I try and fill it up in many ways. But that doesn't help because the trauma is very, very deep. And every time I experience a physical trauma, it reminds me of the deeper trauma, which is even more painful, which spiritually we understand is deeply unconscious for many of us, but it is existing there. And so this creates a deeper experience of pain, and that, unless and until we speak about dealing with that from a spiritual level, it becomes quite difficult. So we say, this experience of trauma reminds us of something deeper, and that makes the experience even more painful. And this experience, the inner experience of trauma, informs my outer experience. This becomes even more painful, because this is very, very painful. Many times we speak about karma. We speak about karma in many different ways. But here we speak about karma as our existential responsibilities. Our existential responsibilities towards the self, towards the world in which we are, in which we exist, in which we unfold our existence, we have some existential responsibilities. How do I carry out those existential responsibilities? And if I do not carry them out, because that is the nature of the spirit, and if I don't carry them out, I am creating trauma for myself. And that informs, and then therefore, any external experience will be even more painful because that pain reminds me of something very, very deep. Does it make sense? Or is it Latin? I've experienced this in myself. So for example, you know, I started meditating 18 years ago, right? Around 18 years ago. And 18 years ago, I would sort of understand this intellectually, but I wouldn't be able to relate to this. But now I know. I can relate to this very, very clearly. Because now I feel it. I feel it. If someone insults me and I feel anger, I know it's coming from my pain. It's not coming from that person's behavior. It's coming from my pain. Then I ask myself, what is that pain? Where is this pain coming from? That person behaved like this towards me. Yes, but why is that creating me? Creating pain for me? Why? Obviously. I had some desire for that person to behave in a certain way with me, and that has become frustrated, that has given me sorrow, and that is creating this pain. Where did that desire come from? Why do I want that person to behave so nicely towards me? Because I don't feel so good deep inside. Am I aware of how I'm feeling inside? Usually we are not. We are so busy doing in this world. We are so busy doing.
Every time we feel this emptiness, observe, I observe my reactions. Every time we feel this emptiness, sometimes emerging, we want an escape from that emptiness. Switch on the television. Nice movie happening on television. Read some book. Go onto the internet. Call up someone and speak to them. We are seeking an escape, and because we are seeking an escape from that emptiness, we can never address that emptiness. It remains there. And every time I feel pain, every time I feel the emptiness, it's an opportunity for me to transform it. And every time I run away from that emptiness, I'm losing that opportunity to transform it. Not only that, I am deepening my emptiness, I am deepening my pain because I'm doing nothing about it.
How do you transform it?
Yeah, we'll speak about that. That's the multi-million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
We're going to do it all today. You know, when you leave today at 6 o'clock, you'll be anger-free, pain-free, everything. That's it. You will reach your perfection. That is the guarantee. Right? Good news. Bon nouvelle. Here. Yeah. It's a lifetime of work, right? It's a lifetime of work. But the question is, am I expanding my awareness? Am I incorporating in my awareness these experiences of my own inner emptiness and fear operating from here? And so when I feel the anger, I, of course, someone has done something to me, I want to give it back to them, right? That's my first experience, give it back to them. So evolutionary psychologists will say, well, yeah, anger is very good because it's an evolutionary adaptation. It's a response that has helped species survive. Historically, okay, all that is fine. But it doesn't help me right now. It damages my relationships. Right? So people say, anger gives you motivation, anger can be sublimated into something very constructive. All that is fine. No questions and no criticism against those theories, because that is also true. But we are looking at those experiences of anger that are, of course, debilitating. When anger starts destroying my life, when anger starts destroying my relationships, when anger starts destroying my ability to function. We are looking at those experiences. So we were speaking about these active expressions of anger. Could we have passive expressions of anger? What could be passive expressions of anger towards others? Let's begin with towards others. Yes? You were saying something?
You're more like passive. You don't say anything for like 3 days or something.
Yeah. And what do? You ignore.
Yes.
You sort of avoid, you ignore. You make sure that the other person feels they are not valid. They are invalid. So I'm hurting inside, I have this pain inside, and I pretend as though I'm not at all affected. So I look at that person, I look away. Or I just, but you know, the pain is just, it's festering inside. That doesn't solve the problem. That could be one expression, passive aggression. And then I can do many other things. What else can I do in passive aggression? Many times in couples you observe this, sorry?
What about crying?
Crying, yeah, well, that's obvious, right? Yeah, you cry.
Think.
Sorry?
Think.
Yeah, but what do you do? Passive?
That's passive as well, but it's still like generally.
Yeah, but you know, passive aggression is certain patterns we engage in which we ourselves may not be aware of, that it is coming from this phase of anger.
Isn't thinking bad stuff about people like a passive aggression?
Yeah, of course, you could also speak about that. Yeah, true, it's, you know, going on in the mind, ruminating. But some interesting strategies, you were saying something?
Couldn't it also be to make the other person feel very guilty? So you can say in a nice way, you did that and that to me now.
That could also be certainly one way. Many other things. One way is also sometimes, you know, you make a commitment to the other, and then you don't follow up. You don't do it. Say the other asks you, honey, can you do this? Yeah, I'll do it. And you don't do it. And not because you've forgotten, you just don't do it. And then you say, oh, I forgot. Oh, this thing came up, and oh, the children were there, and something like that. So the wife says, honey, can you take care of the kids? And the wife has been nasty to the husband the previous night, okay? Now this guy doesn't want to shout at her because he's afraid of losing her. See, all these dynamics are happening inside. So this guy is afraid of losing her. So he doesn't want to shout at her. But he's feeling anger, and that anger hasn't been resolved. So what to do now? Next day she says, honey, you take care of the kids, I have to go out. Yeah, I'll do it. And then by the time the wife comes home, the house is in a mess.
All the dishes are all over the place, there is powder on the floor, there is all sorts of mess. Because she has to come and clean it up. You see? He wants to teach her a lesson. She has to come home and she left the child with me. Now I'm going to make sure you come home and do more work. You thought you would be escape from work? No, no. But I did my best, what to do, you know, and this happened, and this happened. And now she has to do all the work. You find these dynamics sometimes playing out, some form of passive aggression in this way. Committing, saying something, and then not doing it, and then making the other, making life difficult for the other. What could be passive aggression towards the self? So we can have many patterns like that, where superficially I show that I have all good intentions and everything, but I keep sabotaging the other's interests. I sabotage the other's interests. Could we have experiences of such passive aggression towards the self? Yes?
Yes, I think when, when people commit to something or sign up for something and does not finish,
the same thing, how do I behave towards commitments to myself? Do I live up to the commitments I made to myself? This is also passive aggression. And we are not aware of this. We are not aware of this. We know what is good for us. We made an appointment with the self. Every morning at this time I'm going to get up and meditate. I sabotage myself. And in the night I know if I'm going to sit and watch television for so long, I won't be able to sleep properly and I won't be able to wake up in the morning. And yet I find myself compulsively watching the television. My mind is going, no, I should sleep, but I keep watching the television. I should sleep and I keep watching. What is happening here? We're not even aware of it. I'm punishing myself. I'm punishing myself because I hate myself and I believe I don't deserve good things. I don't deserve good things. Am I aware of these dynamics? People engage in behaviors like overeating, over-dieting, going on all sorts of very unhealthy dietary regimes, violence towards it. Where is it coming from? I want to look beautiful, okay, but where is this violence coming from? What is this hatred towards the self that I am carrying? Where has this hatred come from? Experiences of the childhood, yes. But what about my inner self? How is my inner self? And so we speak about, am I aware of what is happening at the inner level of the soul? Am I aware of how the experiences of the world, first of all, many a times, we're not even aware of this. There is a movie, I don't know how many of you have seen that movie, it's called Happy. Have you seen that movie? You seen that? No, you should see that movie. It's a very nice movie. Nice, you know. I mean, it's nice because it helps you. It's also very sad in many ways. There is this, in that movie, there is this example of a girl from the United States. And she was very beautiful. She was a beauty queen, you know, winning many beauty competitions and all that stuff. So, of course, her identity is in her physical beauty. And anyway, she gets married, she has children, and she has an accident. And in the accident, she's run over by a truck, by, you know, one of those big cars. And it's like on her face, she's run over on her face. So her face is completely disfigured. People cannot recognize her. Then she goes through many experiences, many surgeries to sort of rectify. But obviously, it cannot be put back to how it was. So even after many surgeries, she ends up with a pretty disfigured face. Do you remember this from the movie? No?
It's another film.
Okay, maybe it's another one. It's a documentary, Happy. It's not a feature film. It's a documentary. So she's completely disfigured, and even after many plastic surgeries, she's unable to recover. And in this process, her husband leaves her, which is even more painful. Because he cannot handle all this, whatever reasons, he leaves her. And now first the trauma of the accident and having lost her beauty, and then the trauma of having lost her husband. It's a very painful experience, right? Very painful experience. And in the middle of all this trauma, she somehow remembers something that she had forgotten. And this is where we are speaking about how one trauma can remind us of some other trauma. And she recalled that when she was young, when she was a child, she was sexually abused by her father. She'd forgotten that. She'd completely forgotten that. But when she was lying in the hospital, going through these painful experiences, her husband leaving her, all this, while she was in the hospital, suddenly these memories start coming back. She had never dealt with these memories, see? These memories start coming back. And it's very, very painful. Very, very painful. But she has to now deal with it. Of course, then she goes through the process of dealing with it. And so at the end of the day, she says, I think I am happier now than I was when I was a beauty queen. Because that was illusory. I was trying to run away from something else deep inside me. By being this beautiful woman and taking care of my looks and having all these cosmetics and indulging myself in all the attention I was getting from my friends, from my college fraternity, from all these people. I was running away. Now I know. And so she says, and then she finds another man and she gets married and he loves her and all that. But all that is fine, but you know, the experience, many traumatic experiences are not even addressed. Traumatic experiences that have happened in our lives are sometimes not addressed. And then we have the deeper traumatic experiences that we may not even be aware of, but that creates these experiences of sorrow and suffering and loss and trauma and anxiety. Yeah, so what do we do? That's the question. I'll give you a nice example from one of my experiences. I'll try and use this page and then I will go back to that board. So this is an experience of, say, three people, right? So there is this person A, this person B, and this person C. So, story of A, B, C. Alpha, Beta, Charlie. Now, Alpha is the boss. Okay, they're working in a company. Alpha is a boss. Beta and Charlie are working in the team. They're working in a team under the supervision of this guy. So B is already working with A. So there is a relationship here already in existence. C joins the organization a little later. And when C comes in, he starts developing a relationship, of course, with these two people. Now C's relationship with A is slightly problematic. So there is a problem here. Okay? They don't get along so well. They get along sometimes. Sometimes they don't. They don't understand each other so well. B and A, their relationship was, earlier problematic. Not now. Now they are sort of okay. They have sort of reconciled their differences, but they are sort of okay now, right? Now, this is very good relationship. They love each other. It's like they found brothers, long-lost brothers, separated at birth, sort of thing. Really, they get along very, very well, okay? They just, you know, love each other's company, and they spend a lot of time talking to each other and doing things together. They love doing the work together. So it's an ideal work relationship, okay? Now, C, of course, joins the company, and then C is engaged in this activity with B, but C is also engaged with Delta, and whatever, Gamma, and whatever, London, etc. He's engaged with many other relationships to the workplace because this guy has a high level of capability. So he's working in the company. He's also engaged with other teams. So in course of time, what starts happening is Charlie gets more busy with Delta, Gamma, and London. And so he does not have time so much now to give to Beta. Okay, you follow the dynamic? So he's not having the time enough now to give to Beta. Now, Beta starts reacting with anger. So he starts reacting with anger. He starts getting angry. He doesn't show it. Because Beta is a very spiritual person. It's not me, by the way. But it's someone else I know very well. Who also has been practicing meditation for many years. So I know these dynamics. So he has this whole identity of spirituality. So he's very spiritual. So he doesn't get affected by all that. So he doesn't accept his own anger. And anger is simmering inside. He doesn't accept that anger. No. He's busy. He's very good. He's very capable. I'm very happy for him. And my happiness comes from the happiness of others. I'm very spiritual, so I'm very happy. So what is happening inside is the anger is brewing. The anger is brewing. The anger is brewing. The anger is brewing.
And then their relationship almost becomes minimal because this guy becomes very, very busy with Delta Gamma in London. So then it becomes minimal, and this guy's anger is increasing and increasing and increasing. And suddenly he starts feeling, no, but you know what? I really respect Charlie. I admire him a lot, but I think his commitment to the organization is not good. His commitment isn't as it should be. And I have a problem with that, because I'm committed to this organization. And I would like to ensure that my colleagues are committed to this organization as well. Now, he's not giving enough time to our work, to our activities, and therefore there is a problem. So he goes and he speaks to Alpha, the boss. Now, remember, this guy already has a problem with this guy. They don't get along so well. So there is something happening here anyway. So this guy goes and speaks to him. And he says, you know what? I have these feelings about... something else happened. So another project comes up. And Alpha calls Beta. And he says, hey, we have another project. It is in Charlie's work domain. So he's going to take charge. But I would like you to work with him. So till then, everything was okay. He says, I would like you to work with him. Now, this guy goes through storms inside for about 3-4 days. Work with him? I can't work with him. Why don't I work with him? Oh, because, you know, his commitment is not good for the organization. And he needs to understand his commitment is not good enough. So he goes and speaks to Alpha. Alpha, this is what I feel. This guy's commitment is not good. So if I'm going to help him, that will be like reinforcing his lack of commitment to the organization. I can't allow that. Because, you know, his commitment, he has to learn that his commitment has to be good. Alpha says, okay, why don't you have a talk? Typical Danish way, right? Why don't you talk to Charlie? Right? So I can't solve your problems. You know, you have to sort of sort it out between yourself. So I think it's a good idea for you to go and talk with Charlie. Now, what is happening here? This is behavior, right? And by the way, that led to a big disaster in the company. So we'll come to that later. What is happening here? Then other next step. So next step, this guy writes an email to Charlie. So, dear Charlie, I and you need to have a talk. Very Danish direct. I and you need to have a talk. The problem is, basically, I believe that your commitment to the organization is not strong enough, and I would like to talk to you about it. So Charlie writes back saying, okay, sure, let's have a talk. And you find a time. And the talk, apparently, is this. The talk consists of Beta going after Charlie for about 15 minutes non-stop about all the problems that Charlie has with his behavior. That's the talk, right? So at the end of the talk, Beta has downloaded all that stuff that he was feeling into this guy Charlie, and Charlie starts feeling completely, where did this come from? Because till then, Charlie had a lot of affection for Beta. After this behavior, Charlie was thoroughly confused, and he lost his good feelings for Beta, and eventually that led to obviously a problem. Now this guy doesn't want to work with him. He's carrying resentment against him. Right? And this guy is sitting and watching them both. So what is happening here? Conflict, right? In groups, it's complicated. But a lot of personal issues come in. You were saying something.
That B feels rejected.
B feels rejected, C feels rejected, everybody feels rejected. What was the role of this guy? What was the role of this guy? Let's try and look at it in this model that we have spoken about now. A and C are not in good relationship. What is happening here? Now C comes into the company. You know, we all carry our baggage from the past. So let's keep that. We all have our baggage from the past. Stuff that has happened to us in the world. Stuff that we have done to ourselves, which we have created trauma and pain for ourselves. So we have this both kind of baggage we are carrying. And because we are carrying this baggage, we want to find some sort of compensation for it. One way of finding compensation is this desire to find happiness and sort of some sort of support in relationships. Now, that sort of a support A didn't get from C, C didn't get from A. So A wasn't helping C fill up his emptiness. C wasn't helping A fill up his emptiness. They don't like each other. Because they're not helping each other fill up each other's emptiness. They like each other very well because they're helping each other fill up their emptiness. So they love it. Now, in this process now, they didn't fill up their emptiness before, but now they've become okay. Now, this guy is holding anger against C because C has not been nice to him. This guy is holding anger against A also because A has not been nice to him, but that's a different story. Now, B, working from his emptiness, has the desire of A to fill up his emptiness so he can sort of feel good about himself. And this happens for some time, but after some time, C gets busy. C gets busy, doesn't have time for B. Doesn't have time for B, B starts getting frustrated because his desire is not being fulfilled. But he's not aware of what's happening inside him. He reacts with anger. A also is not aware of what's happening inside him. He reacts with anger. How does he react with anger? It's called fence sitting. It's a passive aggressive behavior. Fence sitting. Two people are in conflict. You sit and you watch. You don't just sit and watch. You even instigate the conflict. So now B comes and speaks to A, and B is all worked up, angry. A is the boss of the department. It's A's responsibility to look at what is happening and ensure that the dynamics in the department and the organization are working well. A is a very experienced manager. A tells B, go speak to him. And later on when I spoke to all these three people, then you would start digging deeper. A wanted C to learn the lesson. B became a tool that A used so that C could learn a lesson because C was not showing respect to A. So this guy, fence sitting, this is passive aggression. I don't say anything to you, I'm okay with you. Oh, you're very nice, you're very good. Now I find this other guy having a problem with you, very good. But go and talk to him because he needs to learn that he's doing something wrong. So this guy goes and he messes up that relationship. So A's emptiness is satisfied that I have now, that guy has learned the lesson, but the problem is the whole company suffers. Now, this guy, B, his desire is not being fulfilled. He goes and shows actual direct active anger towards C. C gets hurt. Why does C get hurt? Because C is also expecting something from B. He's carrying his own baggage inside. B gets angry with him. His desire to find his lost self-worth, whatever, is not being fulfilled. He starts getting angry. Everybody is getting angry because of their own inner emptiness. Everybody is blaming the other because of their own inner emptiness. Who will take the leadership here? So what is leadership in this context? How do we transform this? Someone has to take the leadership, right? What will we do? Yes.
Just owning up to one's own emotions. And
yeah, but that is there. We need to go deep. Without this awareness, it's very difficult to transform. Without this awareness that my problem is coming from me. It's not coming from the behavior of these two people. It's coming from me. Interestingly, this guy, C, he's not a spiritual guy. He doesn't do any meditation. This guy does a lot of meditation and all that stuff. This guy doesn't do any meditation. Michaela?
I was wondering, if B does a meditation, if C doesn't, then how can B help C? If you can come to that later, maybe.
B is not helping C, actually. No, C is going to help B now.
But how?
How could he have done?
Yeah.
By understanding what is happening here. If B can understand that my pain, my suffering, my anger, my perception of the other not being committed is coming from my selfishness.
But how does that help C? C is in his own bubble and...
Yeah, because then I stop accusing C, right?
Yeah, but he's still not helping C with his problem. So how can he help C?
C is angry because this guy has misbehaved with him.
But I was thinking if C was angry just because he's always angry.
No, he's not always angry. He's angry now with him because he has misbehaved with him.
No, but I was thinking if it was another example.
Yeah, then we can speak about another process, of course. But right now, in this case, yeah, it was another example. How can B help C is what you're saying. B can help C, first of all, by understanding what he is going through. Of course, C has to take initiative himself. Otherwise, how will he be helped?
But how?
But he has to take initiative. He has to understand. Without that, he will keep being trapped in that cycle of anger and pain.
But many people do that. And how can we...
That is why we are in this world in which we are.
But
That is why we have the conflicts in the world, because people are so trapped in this. It is too painful for them to go in here. It's just too painful.
But how do we get out if it's a boyfriend or a husband? How do we get them out?
First, let's try with ourselves.
But, yeah,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah, no, no.
You know
first,
what I mean?
I know what you mean, but first I have to try. And you know what? I've experimented with this in my life. And actually, I'll give you an example here. C said, and C somehow very intelligent, we worked a little bit of coaching and stuff like that. C recognized that, you know, I am feeling let down by B, but that's because I expected something from B, and that's my issue, that's my problem. And he decided to take the leadership. He went back and worked with B. He started meeting B, speaking to B. Though this guy is the spiritual one, this guy is not the spiritual one. But he said, it's okay, I'm going to go beyond that conflict. Because he worked with this model and he recognized that, well, it's coming from my own selfishness and that's not being satisfied. He actually worked with both B, he worked with also A. And this is where you're saying, how do we transform others? We transform others by giving them love. Simple. There is really nothing beyond that. He worked on that level because this loss and trauma, this entire process needs to heal. And for the healing, we speak of two words here. It's a little bit of Hindi, but I'll put it in because it sounds very nice, at least to me. One we speak about as dharma. And the other we speak about as karma. Now, I've run out of space, so I can't write anymore. But dharma. Dharma is a Hindi Sanskrit word which roughly translates into religion. But it's not about religion as in Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. It's not about that. Dharma, in the deepest way, is the religion of the self, which basically means the values of the self. Spiritually, in the philosophy of Raj Yoga, we speak of these core values, love, peace, happiness, power, purity, bliss. Basic values of the soul. That is our dharma. That is our religion. That's what we speak about in Raj Yoga. And so following your religion, following my dharma, means to hold on to these values, which means if the other is angry towards me, how do I heal that pain? I heal that pain by experiencing love for that same person who is showing anger to me. This is dharma. This is the religion of the soul. In this process, I heal myself, I also heal the other. That's your answer. I heal myself, I heal the other, because that pain is a sign of my suffering. The pain I am feeling from your behavior is a sign of my suffering. And that's an opportunity for me to heal something within myself. I can escape from it. I can escape from it, one, by hitting back with anger, with my assumption that that will give me back my self-respect, which it won't. Because if I give in to anger, I've gone against my value of love and I've lost more respect for myself. So that won't. I can try and sort that problem out by some other form of escape, avoid that person, don't meet that person, don't talk to that person. That doesn't solve the problem. That has come as an opportunity for me to change. And the change comes when I say, okay, you show me anger, I show you love. And I can show you love if I can go deep inside myself and bring out that love from deep within me. And this is where the process of meditation helps. When I experience that love in the soul, when I experience the love of God, I can afford to give love to others because I feel fullness inside. And this is the deep process of change. And when I start healing the self, I feel love. Why am I feeling hurt? Because that person didn't show me love. Respect is a sign of love. I'm feeling hurt. C is feeling hurt because B did not show love to C. Now what? I'm going to wait for B to show me love? I don't even want B to show me love anymore because now I'm angry towards B. So if B shows love, I'll reject that love, right? I'll reject that love because that will make me feel even smaller. That will make me feel that B is controlling me. And I don't like that. So I reject that love. People do that, right? Someone is being nasty to them. Tomorrow they try to be nice. We reject that. Why do we reject that? Makes us feel out of control. Makes us feel small. I'm dependent on the other. Helpless. Rejected. But when I can generate the experience of love, both for the self and for that person, I regain my control. I regain my self-respect.
And in that process, I begin to heal. This is Dharma. This is the practice of Dharma, holding on to my values no matter what. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. I've experienced this myself. Someone has behaved nastily towards me. And then I say, I have to feel love for them. I sit in meditation and I try to experience love. 3 days, it's a big fight. I can't experience love. I mean, love? Come on, what's love? I've forgotten everything about love. But I keep going. I keep going. I keep going. After 3 days, earlier it used to be much, much more, but now I know, I can understand. After 3 days, I have a breakthrough. But I have to keep trying. Every day, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, focus on experiencing love for that soul. Then there is a breakthrough. And the breakthrough comes when I can empathize, I can really feel the pain in the other that is creating their anger. Because B felt pained because of the lack of communication with C. There was pain, and that pain created their anger. When I can see, when I can feel their anger, not intellectually, when I can feel their anger, I feel mercy. Something opens up within me, something bigger, larger than it opens up, and then there is flow of love. And you know what? The others start changing. The others feel that. They feel that. Their relationships to you start changing. Their weaknesses, they get the power to deal with their weaknesses. This is the deep power of meditation. We can reach out through our mind and help others overcome their weaknesses. But for that, we have to go deep into the soul and draw on the power that is there. This is Dharma. What is karma? Karma are our existential responsibilities. Dharma is my religion, the religion of the soul, the religion of love and peace and happiness and bliss and power and purity. Karma, my existential responsibilities. We all have certain existential responsibilities. That is the ground of our existence. My children, if I have any children, my wife or husband, if I have any, you know, my work, my relationships. Now, if these have come to me, they have come for a purpose. And if there are difficulties I'm experiencing in this, there is a purpose in that. Am I going to deal with it or am I going to run away from it? If I run away from it, I'm running away from my existential responsibility. I'm not performing my karma. I stay in that place and I deal with that issue. But I need a lot of strength to be able to deal with it. It's very, very difficult. But when I learn to connect with the soul and to God, I get the strength and I stay there. I deal with the issue. I perform my karma. And when these two work together, we experience something else. A lot of Hindi words for you today. We speak about something called artha, which is meaning. This is the experience of purpose or meaning in life. When I hold on to my dharma, I perform my karma, I experience meaning, I experience fullness. And that fullness then helps me overcome the experiences of trauma and pain that I am carrying inside the soul. This is some work. It takes a lifetime, but it can be done. And we find progression. We find progression. Over a period of 18 years, I can tell you from my experience, I have found progression. I can challenge now. I couldn't do it before, I can challenge now. If someone gets angry and nasty to me, I will transform that. I will transform that relationship. I will make that person love me so much. Not out of a sense of ego. Not out of a sense of ego. I will make that person love me so much by loving that person. Why? Not because of a sense of ego. Because it is the natural nature of the soul to love. By making that person love, I am restoring that person to their original stage. By loving, I am restoring myself to my original stage. This is the love of the soul. It can happen. And I can make it happen. Each one of you can make it happen. You can transform even the most difficult and painful relationships. You can transform them into the most beautiful relationships. And remember, the more the pain I feel in a relationship, the more the love there was in that relationship. That's why I feel the pain. That's why I feel the pain, because there was so much love. The problem is that love gets mixed with expectations, then I want to feel good by the other's behavior, and then it creates problems. But there was love. And I can regain that love. And then I am in control. and then I don't have to feel angry. Yes?
I have a question on a situation that I do not understand. If you have like a couple and let's say the man is so angry, like in a bubble, and no matter what the woman is doing, giving love to him, he just cannot see it or receive it because he's so close.
Yeah.
And it happens that the woman, she gets very sad, and then he gets very sad, and then he gets very affectionate, and then he shows love, and then she shows love.
Mm.
And that, I do not understand what's happening there, because it goes against everything you're saying about giving love and heals everything.
Why does it go against?
Because she gets sad and angry, and then he gets suddenly sad but loving to her.
Maybe when he sees her state, he feels mercy. And because he feels mercy, he's able to access his love and show
that
love.
Is that good?
It could be, depending on where that love is coming from. Because it could also be, sometimes it's very tricky, right? Sometimes it's like feeding on each other.
Mm.
It's like feeding on each other.
Yeah.
So you feel low, I feel low. Both of us are feeling low. So let's make each other feel good. And then we get trapped in this cycle and we start losing more and more respect for the self. It can become very tricky. So when we speak about love, it has to come from the space of the soul, not from the space of the ego. The love from the space of the soul is liberating love. It is not a love that traps you in a particular relationship. It's a love that liberates you. There is a difference in these two forms of love. The one that comes from the ego is disguised as love, but is actually attachment. But it requires a lot of clarity in my mind to separate the two. And that is the regular practice of meditation. I start distancing myself from this reality, then I can make out the difference between love and attachment. I know where it is pure, selfless love, and where it is selfish love. That requires a lot of clarity. Yes, and then we will have to meditate, yes?
My question is, I understand these theories and how you have explained to try and apply them perhaps in working relationships, personal relationships. How can you attempt, for example, to start to give love to, say, somebody who's from a completely different culture, has completely different values, so you find yourself just in conversation off completely disagreeing with everything they think and believe?
Mm. Very good question. How do you work with that? Yeah, because then we are working with the values of the ego. The values that are shaped through our cultural upbringing are not the values of the soul. They are the values of the ego. This is what we learn. So to be able to love a person from different cultural realities, I have to go into something very deep. Those are the values of the soul. Values of love and peace and happiness, everybody has that. It doesn't matter which culture they come from. Am I able to go beyond? But for that, I have to go beyond my ego. I have to go beyond this cultural, religious, language, ethnic, whatever. All these identities that have been created in the process of my upbringing. I have to learn to go beyond. All this is the ego. This is what creates suffering. This is what creates differences. So going beyond these, of course there is something in common with all. At the level of the soul, there is something in common. And this is what we speak about as soul consciousness. Going to the level of the soul where we can connect with all, it doesn't matter where it comes from. And there we find this release of love. The practice of meditation is actually creating the experience of soul consciousness. So then we can take it with us in our daily life and use it in the world. But that requires regular practice. And that requires us to, of course, learn meditation in a systematic way and practice it systematically. If you have, we have meditation courses happening at the center. You might have done them, or you might want to do them. It's up to you. But you might want to consider doing them, because we have to learn the process and then, of course, apply it. Okay, we are out of time, so let's wind up with some meditation. A few minutes.
once again, I let the body and the mind relax. Letting go of all thoughts and experiences of this external world, the world of the ego. I withdraw myself from this external world. And I go deep within to the center of my being. Deep within to the center of my existence. I experience my entire existence concentrating, converging into a point of light, sparkling like a diamond in the center of the brain. I, the eternal spirit, speck of light, a point of infinity, and in this consciousness of my eternal self, I go beyond all the limits of this physical world. I see myself beyond space, beyond time, in a world of light. I find myself resting in the light of the Supreme. Experience the original nature of the soul. Peace and love and mercy. Letting the light of God flow into me, into the very depths of my being. Burning away the traces of resentment, frustration, the soul peaceful. holding on to this light and this silence and this peace, I allow myself to return back to this world of action, back to this body, this costume of mine. And once again, I find myself seated in the center of the brain, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. I, the eternal spirit, the child of God, the being.
Thank you for your day, and go up.